I guess the truce is over, he said to himself.
Where have you been? She asked.
Took a walk. She looked slightly suspicious, but as he got back into bed beside her, Jane's expression changed.
How did you like your lemonade? She asked.
Huh?
You told me that when they hand you a lemon, you should start making lemonade. How did you like the lemonade?
Grinning, you're no lemon, Jane. You're a peach. He kissed her, and she kissed back, and their bodies twined together once again. They barely had time to pull on their swimsuits and take a dip in the lagoon before they heard a plane coming in. Jane squinted up into the bright morning sky.
It's early, she said.
I don't think that's your plane, said Dan.
Who?
It's for me. And you. She stared at him.
What do you mean?
We're going to Alphonsus. Grab your bag. He started toward their hut as the plane swooped in for its landing.
You can't leave this island, Jane shouted after him.
Watch me, and you're coming too. She dashed after him.
What do you mean? You weren't even allowed to make a phone call. We warned the manager and his entire staff.
Honey, the manager and the entire staff work for me. I bought this joint, the whole frigging chain, the day you invited me to meet you here.
You what?
He stepped into the hut and began tossing his scattered belongings into his travel bag. You ought to check up on the ownership of the places where you want to hold prisoners. Not that it would have done you much good. There are four other corporations between me and this hotel chain. You'd have spent a couple of days following the paper trail to find me.
You sneaking bastard!
He looked up at her, standing in the doorway, fists planted on her hips. The swimsuit she wore was a form-fitting maillot, emerald green.
You're calling me a sneak? Dan laughed. I didn't invite you here for the purpose of sticking you in the slammer.
And last night, you knew you were going to do this. And this morning?
I knew I was going to try. I'm not going to let Malik or you or the Pope in Rome steal my company away from me. Not without a fight. Furious, Jane pounded a fist against the bamboo screening. It rattled as if one more shot would knock it down.
Come on, come on, we don't have time to waste. I'm not going with you.
You sure as hell are.
No!
Closing the Velcro seal on his travel bag, Dan said, Jane, I may be old and slow and softened by living on the moon too much. Maybe Malik can beat the crap out of me. But I can still fling you over my shoulder and carry you out to that plane if I have to. She glared at him.
You'd have a heart attack halfway there.
Shrugging. Then I'll be dead and that'll be the end of it. Will you cry over my body?
I'll do something else over your body.
That's not very ladylike. Come on, time's wasting.
I'm not going, she insisted.
He stepped up to her, smiled sweetly, and said, Either you come with me conscious, or I'll knock you out cold and drag you.
You wouldn't dare.
I wouldn't like to.
A minute ago you were going to carry me.
Stop stalling. I need you as a hostage. Otherwise that damned Malik would probably use one of the orbiting lasers to blast my spacecraft. Jane looked at him.
You're serious, aren't you?
Totally. She went to the dresser and began emptying the drawers into her carry bag. 14. I've got to remember to give O'Dare a bonus, Dan told himself. A big one. The half-hour flight to Papeete was thankfully uneventful. The space plane was waiting on the runway, sleek and delta-winged and glistening white in the late morning sun. Dan and Jane stepped from the little jet that had carried them from Tetiaroa directly into the space plane's big, empty passenger compartment. With only a routine holdup by traffic control, the space plane trundled out onto the runway and arrowed into the sky, engines screaming. Plenty of people come to Papeete on their own private planes, Dan reassured himself. They land space planes here on a regular schedule. This isn't so unusual, I hope. The transfer at the space station Nueva Venezuela went smoothly enough. Jane behaved herself, and the two of them went from the space plane's hatch into the zero-G receiving area at the hub of the station, and directly through an access tunnel into the claustrophobic cabin of a modified orbital transfer vehicle. How do you feel? Dan asked his hostage as they swam weightlessly to their seats in the OTV's passenger deck.
A little queasy, Jane admitted. It's been a long time since I've been in zero-G.
Dan opened the compartment built into the seat's armrest and rummaged through its innards. Finally, he pulled out a slim plastic package. Tearing it open, he handed Jane a little circular medicinal patch. "Slap this on behind your ear. It helps a lot." She started to nod, turned pale, and pressed the patch against her neck. There were no windows in the passenger deck, and even if there were, they would not have been able to see much of the vehicle they were in. An OTV was built for efficiency, not style. Since it flew only in the vacuum of space, it did not need the streamlining or airfoils of an airplane. It had a rocket engine, maneuvering jets, propellant tanks, cargo bay, a cramped compartment for up to 6 passengers, 8, the standard wisdom claimed if they were in love, and docking probes to latch onto a space station or another spacecraft, plus a 2-person flight deck perched at its top like a single bulbous eyeball. From the outside, it looked like an ungainly, unlikely, unlovely collection of metallic spheres and cylinders and cones. This particular OTV was also fitted out, Dan knew, with 2 extra oversized propellant tanks and spindly, spraddly legs ending in broad, round footpads, so that it could set down on the surface of the moon. The ship's co-pilot floated down from the flight deck, feet dangling in midair, only one hand lightly touching a rung of the ladder. A longtime veteran of spaceflight, Dan could see, grizzled, short-cropped hair and a shoulder patch on her astro coveralls that read, "Greatest Grandmom in the Solar System." "Mr. Randolph, flight control has asked us to hold for a few minutes. They said something about a message coming up from Earthside." She looked more annoyed than worried. "Are we cleared for departure?" Dan asked. "We've got a 6-minute window. They've asked us to hold until the message comes in." "It must be a message for you, I guess." "Screw it. Let's get moving. The message can catch up with us while we're in transit." The greatest grandmom in the solar system nodded her agreement.
"You're the boss."
And she pulled herself effortlessly up through the hatch and back into the flight deck. Jane had a bit more color in her face.
"You think the message is from Vasily?"
"Who else?" "And it's not for me. It's for the station security officer to check exactly who's aboard this OTV and why they're heading for Alphonsus."
"He must know we've left Tetyaroa."
"Yep, by now." They felt the slightest of bumps. Detaching from the docking collar, Dan thought. Then a soft pressure, nothing more than a feeling of settling back in their seats. "Departing for Alphonsus," came the captain's voice over the intercom speaker. "Estimated flight time, 18 hours, 11 minutes. "That's the best we can do," Dan realized. "High energy burn, and it still takes more than 18 hours to get there." He sighed to himself. "Well, it's better than the 3 days the Apollo astronauts needed. But hell, 18 hours. Malik could take over Alphonsus and have a firing squad waiting for me by the time we get there." Raffaello Gaetano tried not to let his displeasure show. As calmly as he could, he took a cigarette from the silver inlaid box on his desk and stuck it between his lips. Malik was obviously upset. The Russian paced across the Persian carpet in front of Gaetano's desk, hands clasped behind his broad back, face sunk in a frown of deep thought. "He got away?" Gaetano asked in a tone that was almost teasing. "How could he get away from an island in the middle of the Pacific? Did he sprout wings?" Malik gave him a stare that would boil water. "He is a very clever man, extremely resourceful, and enormously wealthy. God knows how many bribes he paid out. My people are interrogating the hotel staff."
"Do you know where he's gone?"
"No, not precisely. But I have a good idea of where he's running to."
Gaetano picked up his heavy silver lighter and puffed the cigarette to life while Malik resumed his pacing.
"So?"
Gaetano asked, blowing smoke toward the ceiling.
"Alphonsus. He'll be surrounded by his own employees there. But once the confiscation is completed, they will be his employees no longer. They will be ours."
"Perhaps," Malik muttered, staring out the window.
"Perhaps. Loyalty is a strange thing. They may remain loyal to him."
The Italian swiveled his desk chair around and saw that a half moon was rising, milky pale in the late morning sky. He smiled to himself. Turning back to Malik, he said,
"Arrest him when he arrives at Alphonsus. That should be simple enough.